VG Tribune Roundtable, episode 50. Greetings, welcome to the big 5-0 episode of VG Tribune Roundtable. We made it, and
yay!
So I'm your host, Jesse Waldack, and with me we have special guest Neil Ronahan from Nintendo World Report.
Hi. Ironically, the connectivity podcast that I'm one of the hosts of, we are knocking down the door at 50 as well. We'll be hitting that in about 2 weeks. We just recorded some stuff for 48, so
you guys caught up to us.
Yes,
we've been slacking the last few months.
I was gonna say, I think I was on it last year, and that was like 30 something.
Yeah, now our predictions episode for the year was episode 33.
Okay, so maybe it was in the 20s.
Done in January. So, summer doesn't seem to do well for us. You know, last summer we had a little bit of a hiatus as well, and then when things started up again, and things were back to normal.
Well, it also doesn't help when Nintendo has epic dry spells in the summer as well, and pretty much gaming in general.
Exactly, which is probably half the problem.
Yeah.
All right, so. Yeah, we're nowhere near the 303 Radio Free Nintendo.
I'm trying to think of any other podcast that I know of that's past that 300 mark. Player One Podcast is also there.
iMore is up to 300.
Yeah.
I think they do like two a week. So they're cheating.
Yep.
iMore is formerly the iPhone blog.
Yeah.
A lot of the podcasts that I started listening to when I got my first iPod like 4 years ago, most of them are actually still around.
Yeah. Oh, really? I was going to say most of mine.
Nintendo World Report, Lloyd Dasby on Twitter, and his stuff. He's kind of an odd.
Yeah.
His shows go up and down, but he's starting to do something weekly again.
Although I guess my favorites always kind of stuck around because I've always been a fan of RFN, Player One Podcast, and Retronauts, and they've all managed to weather the storm throughout the past 5 years or so.
Sweet.
Yep.
And in fact, one of my friends from high school, he also hosts a podcast. It's a more general entertainment type of thing. It talks about movies, comics,
et cetera.
He gets a lot of, I don't remember what websites he gets a lot of his news from, but similar stuff you'd see on cable news, but about entertainment. But his is the Voice of Steve podcast. he doesn't number them, so I have no idea how many he's done. But he's
that's why I like numbering them, because it gives you some kind of forward notion of what you're doing. It's the problem with Connectabytes, the news thing that we do with connectivity is that, it makes sense for that because it's news focused, but then you kind of lose sight of how many of these have we done. I think we've done like 15 of them, which kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, especially pre-E3,
two a week for about 4 weeks, and then we slowed down, and right now it might kind of die out and just come out when there's a lot of news or a lot of games to play. So probably in about a month or two.
Yeah, on September 13th. But
yes.
We'll get to that later.
Yep.
All right, so why don't you start off with what you've been playing?
All right. I guess I'll get the boring old Nintendo thing out of the way first, as I am a Nintendo World Report guy. I've already played Mario, but I haven't played Kingdom Hearts 3D finally. And I have to say, I bought it like a week or two ago, pushed around with it, got Mario, played that, and then finally put it in. Still didn't really grab me right away. And then finally last night, I was in Traverse Town, the first area that you're in, and I finally put some more time into it, got more into the game, discovered like the cool mini game that's in it, Flick Rush, and then started messing around with like the Pokemon-like characters that you have. And I'm super into this game right now. Right now I'm at the 3 or 4 hour mark. I'm in the Hunchback of Notre Dame area, which is pretty much the first area that you could go to. You have your choice of three, but this is the one that's, level appropriate, generally. And I really love these games. I think it looks gorgeous on the 3DS, especially the XL. It's just a really fun game, and it's kind of like, it's a little bit of a laid-back RPG, because it is very linear, but it's, you know, going through these worlds that are somewhat familiar, even though I can't think, I'm actually struggling to remember characters and the plot from Hunchback of Notre Dame, but I mean, it is familiar to me. It's Disney animation. I like Disney animation. And I think it also helps that at this point, I haven't really played a Kingdom Hearts game seriously since Kingdom Hearts 2, or I guess Chain of Memories. I don't know which one I played first. So it's kind of nice catching up with these characters that I haven't really paid attention to in a while, you know, Sora and Riku and Yen Sid and Mickey in this world. And it's kind of interesting to see that. And luckily the game does kind of clue me in enough about what I've missed as far as the plot goes, so I'm not completely lost. Although I could see someone with no knowledge of the series being just totally, totally lost.
So this is a continuing storyline with what, how convoluted the storyline it can be.
Yes. As far as I know, Kingdom Hearts 1 flows into Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, which was a Game Boy Advance spinoff that had like card battling. But then there was apparently a PS2 version that was remade at some point. And then Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories leads directly into Kingdom Hearts 2. And then after that, I get kind of fuzzy on it. I know there was a PSP game, there was a phone game that became a DS game, there was another DS game, and I know that the PSP game that I wish would come to the PlayStation Store so I could play it, because I only have a Vita, Birth by Sleep, that supposedly goes back and is a prequel, as you're playing as these characters that kind of have the first Keyblades, and that kind of leads in directly to how the story progresses in Kingdom Hearts 3D, as Sora and Riku are completing this exam that will then make them like master Keyblade users, and then they can fight the omnipresent danger that, you know, dates back to the prequels and is coming back and rising again.
Interesting. Yeah. I think Kingdom Hearts 2 is the last one I've played and the only one I've ever finished.
Yeah. I remember I finished Kingdom Hearts 1, and then went out the next day to go buy Kingdom Hearts 2. I have a lot of memories of being super frustrated with the first Kingdom Hearts, with the gummy ship and stuff like that. I don't really have a lot of those memories in Kingdom Hearts 2. I think they improved a lot of it. And it seems like in Kingdom Hearts 3D, it's kind of doing that same thing where it might, you know, make the game a little simpler, might make it a lot more focused and linear, but I don't really mind that. Because for me, this isn't a game that I want to have, you know, super extreme challenge. I want to play as a character and go through some damn Disney worlds.
Right.
Yep. And that's what it does. And the Pokemon stuff in it is really cool because you have these creatures, they're called Dream Eaters, that you get recipes for them and you collect these different items that then you make these creatures and you can level them up. They have like ability trees that then like you build up points with them that you then spend on these different abilities for them. And right now I have four created. I can have a party of three in addition to my character. And I have three other recipes and I'm still looking to get ingredients for, and I'm 4 hours into the game.
So is that your party then, these creatures you make, instead of having Donald and Goofy floating around you?
Yep. And it gets a little confusing because these characters that you're getting are also the enemies in the game. So sometimes I'll be like, oh no, there's another enemy. I'm like, oh nope, that's just my little pig looking guy.
Sounds like how they handled the third party member in Final Fantasy 13 too.
Yeah, I have not played 13-2. So.
Neither have I. I just played the demo and was really confused.
Oh, no, actually, I do remember that. I did play the demo 13-2. That was confusing. But, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I can't wait to get to the Tron world, as I really liked Legacy, and I kind of want to see what they do with that. I remember playing a demo of that at PAX East, actually. And I'm glad that this game, I was worried after spending money on this game that I was like, oh, maybe I'm not going to get into it because I had trouble. I got 358 over 2 days or however the hell you say that. And I just couldn't get into it. It was very, very dense, that game, because it starts off with characters that you're unfamiliar with and the weird people in black robes. But Kingdom Hearts 3D kind of hits the ground running and it's a lot of fun. I've been playing some other stuff, mainly thanks to PlayStation Plus. First and foremost, I have to highlight what is something that I'm super glad came to PlayStation Plus and probably validates the entire $50 purchase, even though I could have gotten both games for $50. The Walking Dead, the Telltale series, I played the first episode, and I have the second episode. It also was free on PlayStation Plus. If you are on the fence about PlayStation Plus, I feel like this game is good enough to go and drop the money on, because you know that there are also something like 12 plus other games that you can get on PlayStation Plus. But The Walking Dead is, I mean, it's kind of like an interactive movie where you play as his character, you get to select his dialogue choices. Occasionally you have to perform actions, which I heard kind of dies down in the second episode. But it's an interactive zombie movie, and it's a very entertaining and good zombie movie. Like there are good emotional moments in this. You have to make decisions that lead to people dying, and it's kind of like that Branching Paths thing where, you have the choice between two characters one that could live or the other one could live, and you have to pick between that, and that alters everything else to come. And it just seems like it's gonna go really great places if the first episode's any indication. From what I hear, the second episode starts off with a bang, so I'm just kind of waiting to square away a night, because I know once I start the second episode I won't stop, because I played a half an hour of this, took a break, went to it later that night, wound up staying up till 4 o'clock in the morning finishing.
I've done that a few times on other games. Yeah. Is this game where the decisions you make that phones homes and they log how many people choose this and how many people choose this?
I think it was on the Giant Bombcast that we're talking about this game, where they made the comment about how Telltale apparently has some kind of way that they can, at any time when they're working on the game, they can, or at least, going over a game, they can bring up the percentage of who made this decision that would lead them to this point. So there are kind of those branching paths. Yeah. And you do have, at the end of the episode, you'll see, it kind of breaks it down into, I think, 5 or 6 big decisions. Which you can usually tell. There's actually a timer that counts down. Usually, you have to reply within a certain time. And they'll show you the stats of how many people picked this as opposed to that. And it's kind of interesting because there's some things that, there's one where you have to pick a guy. Basically, you have the choice between a guy dying and a girl dying. And you can kind of see chivalry isn't dead, because I think like 70% of people picked the girl to survive as opposed to the guy to survive. But other than that, most things seem pretty balanced out, and I think that's the ultimate goal for developers, to have it so that way people are making, 50-50 decisions.
I mean, kind of sounds similar to Catherine.
Yeah.
It'll play that.
I played the demo of that.
Okay. Throughout that game, you're making decisions, whether you want to be a good boyfriend and try to get the original Catherine back, or if you want to be a jerk and try to get the other Catherine, and it shows you the stats of people's first time through, and majority of the people are try to get the good ending first, and they only show the stats on the first time through, so it's hard to tell. But I heard that the quote unquote true ending is if you try to stay right down the middle, which is supposedly really hard to do, because one answer can swing the needle pretty significantly one way or the other.
That's a game I've always wanted to check out.
I enjoyed that game. I didn't like the puzzles, but I liked the story.
Yeah, that's what I hear, is that the story is the reason to play that.
Yeah, I ended up playing half the game with the YouTube tutorial walkthroughs.
Yeah, I think if I were to play the game, I would definitely be doing that by the end of the game. and then the other, I'll mention Just Cause 2 pretty quickly. That's a game that I always wanted to play. I remember having a ton of fun with the demo, just blowing stuff up and going around. And I just probably put an hour or so into this game. And, it's an open world game where you have a guy who has, a grappling hook arm and a bunch of weapons. And you can take control of cars and motorcycles and hijack planes and stuff. And it's pretty awesome. And the one thing that I'm thinking of as I'm playing this game is that I don't know why the company that made this isn't making a Bionic Commando game, why they aren't working on Spider-Man, because it is, as you're going around with this guy, what you can do is you can kind of like grapple onto something in the distance, pull yourself through the air, and then you can kind of deploy a parachute. So it's almost like you're kind of slingshotting yourself around, which that makes me feel like a mix of Bionic Commando and Spider-Man, just kind of going around the environment, which is this kind of like lush, beautiful, I think it's South America, this environment where there's all these mountains and beautiful vistas, and it's just a lot of fun to explore in that world. I did like the first couple missions, and I haven't really progressed any farther because I just like going around and blowing shit up. It's a game that's free on PlayStation Plus, and it's totally worth playing. Definitely didn't expect it to be as good and as polished as it is.
Nice.
And the last game that I've been playing lately, or I've been playing some other ones, but the last one I'm going to focus on is Pac-Man Championship Edition DX, which I played a lot of the original, played it on Xbox Live Arcade, also played a little bit of the 3DS Pac-Man Galaga collection. And finally I got Pac-Man Championship Edition DX, which I always heard it was so better than the original, and I didn't really understand that. And now that I'm playing it, yeah, it totally is. And I think what this game does really well is that there's a pretty clear progression as you're going through different Pac-Man stages. Like, you know, you have like a 5-minute time attack, and then you unlock all these time trials that are about, like, you know, about a minute of gameplay. I mean, you can shave down time that kind of break up the time attack into these time trials. And then you go through that, and you set all these records for that, and then there will be a longer time trial, and then another score attack where it's like you have 10 minutes to get as many points as you can, and then you'll unlock the next level, and then you basically do that for every level. I'm only on the third level now, but it's just a ton of fun to go through that, because it does a very good job of you're constantly progressing, you're constantly doing things, and I mean it really makes Pac-Man a more modern game, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I never really liked the original Championship Edition, but when DX came out, I bought that, I think, almost on launch day and on PS3. And I think to this day, that's still the only game I've ever gotten all the trophies on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might be going down that path. Is there a platinum for that one?
I don't think there is, and that's kind of too bad. There's only like 15 trophies. There's a very small amount of trophies. But so playing through it and unlocking everything will get you most of the trophies anyway on your first time through. You really don't have to go completely out of your way to get them like you do in a lot of other games.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed that, and that's about all I've done.
Cool. So I haven't done a lot of video game gaming this week. You know, I've had this monster project at work that I've been working late on that. But the gaming related activities that I have been doing, you know, episode 49 I talked about, I started up Magic the Gathering again, where I picked up the Magic 2013 iPad app, which was for free, played through all its contents, and when it got to the point where it says unlock the entire app for $9.99, I'm thinking, okay, if I want to throw money at this thing, I want cards in my hand. My son and I bought some decks and bought boosters and other cards and built decks that we've been starting to play. And then last Friday, I decided to enter a tournament at my local card shop, which they run a free tournament every Friday.
Cool.
And I wasn't expecting to do any good, and I didn't, but I still had fun. Yeah, the way they do it, you know, the first, there was like 56 people or so they said, today is 6 rounds. So round one, everyone's just randomly paired off with someone else. And they get 0 points for the loss, 1 point for a tie, 3 points for the win, and each round is the best 2 out of 3, and we have 50 minutes to do all this. Then we give them... We say who won and who lost. They figure out a new score. And then round two is they pair us off with someone who has the like score than us.
Oh.
So by the end of the night, you get to see who is 0 and 5 and who is 5 and 0. And there is 2 or 3 people in each category. And most of the other people are somewhere in the middle. I did technically end up with 2 wins because the kids I was supposed to be playing with had to leave. They had curfew or something. You know, the thing started at 6 o'clock my time, so I didn't get home till a little after midnight.
Wow.
So I want to do it again this week, and my kid wants me to take him, which is for a 12-year-old. It's going to be definitely going to be a late night.
Yeah.
But I told him, you know, if you want me to take you, you need to. I won't be able to help you, so I'll be doing my own thing. So you need to have a full understanding of what every card in your deck does. If you're confused, ask me now. And
that just makes me think of the Penny Arcade Pokemon arc that they had recently, where it was Gabe and his kid, and how it was just basically him trying to stack his kid's Pokemon deck.
Yeah, so Paul, I'll probably take him on Friday. My 10-year-old says, I want to go too. And I'm like, we'll talk to your mom about that. it's a very noob-friendly environment. I've heard of horror stories at certain other tournaments where you get ridiculed if you don't know what you're talking about. But this, you know, I got a lot of good pointers on how to improve my deck after the first time, and I've tweaked my deck since, and I definitely have a stronger deck now than I did 2 weeks ago.
So, yeah, that sounds pretty cool, because usually when I go into, you know, comic stores or hobby shops that have, you know, a card playing group in the back, they always kind of look really pissed off. And it makes me being like, how do you even get into this? It's like everyone just seems like they're a dick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this store, you know, started out as like baseball and other sports trading cards back in the late 80s, and it's pretty much evolved now to primarily the trading card games. You know,
yeah.
Pokemon, Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Naruto, there's a whole bunch of others now. And the majority of the square footage of the floor are tables set up so you can play.
That's pretty cool.
And every Sunday they have Pokemon League show there. So kids show up with the Pokemon decks. They get points for just playing. They get free cards for playing. Then they fill up their punch card and they get like a league badge.
Oh, cool.
So I've been playing with the kids there too. I'll usually break off and find the magic table once for play one or two games while the kids are playing Pokemon. But so I've been playing both. The other thing that I've been doing, this is more just more watching, I found out about the Persona 4, the animation.
Okay, so what is this? I'm aware of Persona 4. I'm aware of Persona 4 Golden, the fighting game. What the hell is the animation? Okay.
This is anime series that aired in Japan from October to March. October of last year to March of this year. And it's in 25 episodes. It recaps the basic story of what happened in the game, the PS2 game from 2007.
Yeah.
And so, apparently, episode 26, since traditional, you know, usually there's 26 episodes in an anime series. The episode 26, I think, airs tomorrow night in Japan, and which is their quote-unquote true ending. So, and just have you played the original game? Or
I've played Persona 3. I haven't played Persona 4.
Okay, right. Persona 4, there's like 5 or 6 different endings depending on how you answer a series of questions.
Yeah.
Only one is the true ending, where you you fight the character that's responsible for all the crap that's been going on for the last year.
Yeah.
And so
does Persona 4 take place in high school like Persona 3, or is it in a different environment?
It's in a high school.
Okay. Yeah, I'm likely going to get Persona 4 when it hits Vita. I think the release date for that was announced. It's the end of October, I think. Very excited.
I don't have a Vita yet. I'm not sure if I will, but I still have my Persona 4 PS2 disc that I've been playing. I've played a little bit on my PS3 earlier this year, and the upscale looks nice. So I still have like a launch PS3 that's backwards compatible.
You lucky bastard.
Yeah. And so since I moved, I can't find the disc. So as soon as I find it again, I'll probably play it more. But watching the animation, I forgot how good the story was.
Yeah. And that's one thing is that Persona 3, I mean, it's such an, you know, it's such an anime game. But the story is really gripping throughout it, and you actually want to know what happens next, because it's generally a little off the wall, it's a little crazy, but it's a lot of fun.
I rented Persona 3 kind of when it was new and didn't get much far into it. So I probably should go back and try that again. But yeah, I'm up to episode 14 in the anime, so by this weekend I should finish the 25 episodes that I have. Now, and there is Japanese voices with English subtitles, and it can be seen on Hulu, I think. Hulu has it.
Cool.
And if I had Hulu Plus, then I'd just be able to stream it directly on my iPad, but since not, I'm watching it on my computer, because I'm a cheap bastard. I'm already paying for Netflix. I don't want to pay for two of them.
I don't fault that at all. As someone who leeches Netflix off of another family member and pays for Hulu.
When Netflix changed their pricing strategy, I was fully prepared to say, okay, screw the disc rental, I'll just go streaming only. But I ended up keeping the the disc rental because the kids still use it.
Yeah.
So I got the 2-disc rental from Netflix with the streaming, and I got a 2-game rental from GameFly. So I'm like, I can't afford a third service. So it would be nice to be able to watch this on my iPad and the PS3, but yeah. Well. Okay, so actually, I had 2 items of news ready to go, and then I realized while you were doing your what you've been playing, there's a 3rd item I want to talk about, so we'll get that at the end. So
all right.
The 2 articles I chose to talk about are yours.
I'm flattered. I'm red in the face right now.
So the first one is Nintendo announces a date for an announcement. They like to do that crap, don't they?
That's what everyone likes to do. I mean, what did Square Enix do with The World Ends With You?
Oh, you're right. And and of course, their website was bugged, so I didn't know. But the timer was supposed to start a 7-day timer, but instead the timer just started another hour timer that went off. I'm like, what? Did I miss it? What happened?
Yeah, I ended up refreshing and was just like, oh, okay.
But now it says 6 days.
Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't a topic I was ready to talk about, but if Roger would have been on, I'm sure he would have wanted to talk about
it. I have The World Ends With You. I finally got that on DS recently, and especially after seeing the characters in Kingdom Hearts 3D, after I finish Kingdom Hearts 3D, I will likely move on to that.
Yeah. I rented World Ends With You, and I didn't like the dual screen concept.
It always kind of turned me off, but we did a segment on connectivity about what games would be modern classic, or we would see as classics in like 10 years. And the 2 people, Patrick and Scott, both raved about The World's End With You. And hearing them talk about it, I was planning to just go out that night and go get it. But by the time we finished, it was too late.
I think Roger would have equally raved. All right. So, okay. You write, Nintendo is holding a Wii U press event in New York City on September 13th. It will begin with a presentation hosted by Nintendo of America President Reggie Fils-Aimé that will be focused on, quote, learning more about how the Wii U will change the future of gaming and entertainment, unquote. There will be hands-on demos for the press following the presentation. The event seems to be similar to the 3DS pre-release press event, which happened at the end of January 2012, roughly 2 months before the 3DS launch. Isn't that January 2011?
3D? Oh. I didn't notice
that either when I copied and pasted.
Mistakes happen. Right. Gotta fix that literally right now.
And the Wii Press pre-release press event, which happened in mid-September 2006, roughly 2 months before the Wii launch. Roger is trying to see if he can get Will invited, since he lives in the New York area. If he's able to make it, we should have some good first-hand coverage of the event. Well, it isn't specifically stated that we're getting Wii U release information, but that is what is expected. What price point and date are you predicting, and has this changed since any predictions you had at the beginning of the year, or if any of my listeners have been listening for that long since the late January episode 33, when we did our predictions episode?
Well, I will stand by eternally for November 18th, 2012. In all honesty, there's that part of me that thinks they might be better served by something of like releasing on October 28th instead, and kind of, you know, positioning it as, you know, look, this system's coming out now, we got these games now, and then like every week there will be a new game. And in my head that makes sense, but I have a feeling November 18th almost feels preordained at this point. It's what we all figured that Sunday before Black Friday, and looking at Nintendo's 3DS lineup, guess what? They're releasing a new game pretty much every week up until, shocker, November 18th.
Right.
So I think it's pretty much a lock, especially when this announcement's coming. I kind of was saying that if there was a Nintendo Direct this week, which I still expect there to be a Nintendo Direct by the end of this week, as it's been 2 months since the last one, and they've run a pretty good clip of having a Nintendo Direct, at least in Japan, every 2 months.
And they like to announce them 24 hours in advance.
Yeah, but
that's the part that kind of pisses me off.
Yeah.
Like, thanks for the time to prepare.
Yeah. But I figured if they announce something this week, then, you know what, maybe that October 28th date isn't crazy. But the fact that they're not doing it until September 13th, pretty much, I mean, anything other than November 18th was still kind of wishful thinking, but if it was 99% confirmed for November 18th before, it is now 100% confirmed for November 18th now.
I agree. I think I didn't look it back at the show notes from episode 33, but I believe my prediction was November 18th at a $300 price point, and that prediction is not changing. That's still what I'm expecting.
That's $300. Pretty much what I'm at too.
Say again?
That's pretty much what I'm at too. But do you think there will be a pack-in? In which case, the pack-in would obviously be Nintendo Land.
For $300, yeah, I would hope that is not just a disc packed in, but pre-installed on the system, ready to go.
I mean, I stand by that.
Or at least the code that lets you download it.
Yeah, I think my
gets people online, forces people to get online, which is what they're wanting, and to get this free game.
I think if they do a pack-in, that's how they're going to do it, is have the code that you have to take the system online to get. And the one thing that, as far as the price goes, I think that my personal prediction is $300, no pack-in. But I think it could be $300 or $350 with a pack-in, or $250 or $300 without one. But the one that I would throw money down on is $300, no pack-in. Although it is the kind of thing where I'm like, I kind of hope I'm wrong, but that's just right. What I think. But well, I think in lieu of a pack-in, we will get something kind of like, I mean, not quite Nintendo Land, but there will be stuff like the 3DS had, where we'll have something akin to a Face Raiders, something akin to the AR games to kind of, you know, show you how this works. Maybe there will be some minor Wii Fit U stuff built in, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. After the E3 2011 announcement, my initial thought was closer to $400, but then when they dropped 3DS price 2 months later, then I'm thinking, okay, they better not launch at $400. They got to go at least $300.
Yeah, I would be
$350 pushing it, but I'm still hoping for $300.
I think it would be a mistake to launch it for $400. I think $350 is pushing it, but I could see that happening because I thought the $250 was pushing it. But I feel like they won't make that same mistake again, but they very easily could. And I guess on a final note, I'm all locked in and confirmed to go to this, so I'm counting the days. I'm super, super excited for it.
I bet. I wish I could go.
Yeah, it's pretty much, we had one of our people over in San Francisco was, you know, bummed out that it wasn't in San Francisco, and I'm like, you guys in San Fran get like every other press event. We have, New York has our one for you know, these launch reveals. Like, let us have our one.
And as you told me last week, we don't think we'll ever see a PAX Kansas. So
yeah,
I'm stuck in the middle with nowhere to go,
yep,
except for either coast. Yeah. But I don't like to travel. So, but E3 is worth it. I will hope to go to next year.
Yeah, E3 is usually worth the pain and suffering. At least for me, I've gone for. Shit, I almost forgot how many times I went. That might be a time to stop going. I've gone 4 times, and while some years have been better than others, I mean, I love going to it so much.
Next article you wrote is Nintendo Power ending publication soon. Nintendo Power, a magazine in circulation since 1989, will no longer be published, according to Ars Technica and confirmed by Nintendo Power staffers.
Who later removed their tweets.
Right. Ars Technica cited a source that told them Nintendo and magazine publisher Future were unable to work out a deal regarding Nintendo Power brand, which is owned by Nintendo, as they ran the magazine from 1989 to 2007. Supposedly, Nintendo was difficult to work with and not interested in working with Future on digital ideas that Future thought was necessary for the magazine and brand's success. The current issue available is 281, dated for August 2012. It is unknown how many more are left, but Nintendo Power's Phil Theobald commented on Twitter that they have, quote, something sweet, unquote, planned for the final issue. Then I added, Phil's tweet has since been removed and replaced with the following tweet. I didn't tweet anything. You guys must have imagined that. did you grow up with Nintendo Power, or are you a more recent subscriber?
I'd say a mix of both. I think I had a subscription early N64 years, but it was a magazine that I would read over friends' houses and places like that. I actually, my wife's older brother. I got a big stack of Nintendo Power issues of his that I think were from, I think they're like mixed, scattered between like 1990 and 1993. So that was kind of fun looking at all those old magazines. And then I was a subscriber from probably early 2007 to 99, 2000, something like that. And then I kind of lapsed. That was actually around, I basically went from Nintendo Power to EGM in 2000, 2001. And then kind of lapsed out of magazines until I basically started at Nintendo World Report, where I got a Nintendo Power subscription again. And I look forward to Nintendo Power every month. It's the only magazine outside of EGM in its heyday that's ever really done that for me. I've always loved reading it from when it was a Nintendo, completely Nintendo-run operation to today when it's... What I learned today was that Nintendo licenses it. That it wasn't like Future wholesale bought it or inherited it. It was they had a contract with Nintendo, likely for about 5 years, which is why it expired and is ending now. I've always enjoyed it. This is really kind of sad and depressing to me because I've always loved Nintendo Power, and it was always kind of that print magazine that I was like, well, you know, everything else kind of sucks that everything's dead, but Nintendo Power is still around, and I think it's a gap in the industry that will have a hard time filling, although I think Nintendo will try to fill it with Nintendo Show and Nintendo Week-like content, which I feel like they're missing the point slightly. And I think having that kind of related but unrelated kind of outlet was something that was really great because no other outlet kind of got the access that Nintendo Power did. And maybe the fact that it's gone means that Nintendo will have full and total control as to when stuff gets aired out because there aren't any other magazines that have a good enough relationship with them. I know Game Informer's editor-in-chief has publicly stated about how he doesn't know why Nintendo's so hard to work with. Of course, this was like 3 months after they had a huge Guy with Sword cover story. But I digress. But Nintendo's just hard to work with. It's just that's the long and short of it. I love the company, but they're a pain sometimes. And I mean, that's just how they are, unfortunately. And that seems to be what happened with the breakdown here, is that they didn't want to budge on ideas that Future had and how Nintendo has, you know, their Nintendo Show 3D kind of having that digital and video end. It's a bummer.
I agree. And I too had a subscription when I was younger and then stopped and then started up again. I was actually, I got my NES back in mid-87.
So you want to feel really bad? I wasn't alive.
I keep track of how old a lot of these other podcasters are, and not many will publicly admit that, announce that when they're getting as old as I am. Anyway, so and that was like middle school for me. You know, this isn't second grade. I was seventh grade at that point.
So you're Lindemann era.
Yes. Yeah, I am. My about page on the site, my little snippet about me. You know, I've been playing games since I was six. So at the time I was 36 years old. So I said I've been playing games for 30 years. So now I can say I've been playing for more. Anyway, so I had the initial subscription of the Nintendo Fun Club, which was, I think...
Do you still have those?
Oh, I don't know where those went. And then, so that was a free deal. You didn't have to pay for that. And then the Nintendo Power, and it started out being like once every 2 months. And I remember that first episode, first issue, and it had the Nestor comics, and that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing is someone in the NWR forums actually posted... I guess the final Howard and Nestor comic, where it's Howard kind of going off into the sunset, and I forget what the exact words are, but it's something along the lines of like Howard going off being like, don't worry, Nestor, I'll always be there when you need me. And it's just something that I saw that, and I'm just like, that basically sums up the entirety of Nintendo Power leaving, is that like they're gone, but they're not, that they won't be gone forever as long as we remember them, just like Howard Phillips.
Didn't they have like recent so I don't know where it was, but they did like Nestor today. You know, Nestor is now older and has a kid of his own. I'm like, he's me. He was me back in 1989, and he's still me.
Yeah, I think they did do something like that. I mean, Howard's long gone because that was based off of Howard Phillips, who was one of the guys who was instrumental in starting Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
I actually started doing research as how it started, and it's kind of interesting because you have a lot of people that just worked for Nintendo writing stuff for it, and a lot of them kind of spun into doing localization. And a lot of those early people, with the exception of very few, none of them work at Nintendo anymore.
So I think I had a subscription almost all the way through high school, somewhere either just as when I started college or just a little bit after that when I got married, that I stopped gaming altogether for a while, and so I stopped my subscription. Then when I bought my Wii in early 2007, it came with a card, said, you know, Nintendo Power subscription. So I filled it out and started up again. I think that lasted the year. And then before I started writing for VG Tribune, there was an article that Alexis posted, who was our site founder, that when Amazon was running deals on certain magazines, including Nintendo Power, for $5 for an annual subscription. So I signed up on that, and I think I've been a subscriber ever since that. And I just looked at my most recent issue, and it says I'm not supposed to end until August of 2013. So I still have a year left, so I'm not sure what's going to happen if on whatever or undelivered payment of my subscription happens.
Yeah, you'll probably get you'll probably get another future published magazine. Maybe you'll have your choice between like.
Maybe I'll get another Mario hat.
maybe you'll get At Gamer, the Best Buy magazine.
Oh.
Which has some really good deals in it. I know there was one in there where I already had the game, but a friend of mine I got a couple issues free. I think I'm part of the Best Buy reward zone. I think they just sent out some issues free to people of At Gamer, the Best Buy magazine. And they had something that was like get $20 off of Dragon Quest IX, which is pretty fantastic, considering that makes the game $10.
Yeah, well, that was a launch game for me, so.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't even know where the cartridge is anymore, but you know, that was a game that I put in almost over 200 hours in. Yeah.
Because I reviewed that, I think I put in something like 40 or 50 hours in that game in like a week span and then had to put it down.
Wow.
Because I'm just like, I'm so burnt out on this.
That's insane.
That was a wonderful game.
What I'm hoping that they do, you know, if they start doing Nintendo Power stuff in-house again, you know, especially with the Wii U, they can make, you know, even though they said they had problems with whatever digital ideas Future had, if they do something on the Wii U pad, something interactive. Yeah, something interactive on the gamepad, that would be awesome.
I really hope that's what they do. I hope that's the direction that they go in, is that you could kind of have that multimedia experience of that iPad-like interface, except for Nintendo would have full control over it, which is something that they probably look for.
Yes, they like their control.
Yep. And, I mean, having a Nintendo Power-like magazine on the iPad would be something that would be wonderful, honestly.
Right. Yeah. Both iPad.
Did I say the iPad, or did I say I meant the gamepad.
I would expect iPad. If that happens, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Because at least that would get it the availability in more homes.
Or build something like that in the Miiverse. I mean, you can kind of have a news crawl in that. That in addition to, you know, your social media data, you could also kind of have like Nintendo news and videos and new trailers and stuff.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
Okay. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was an article that I wrote on Friday. Hyrule Historia to be released in North America. Released in December of last year, Hyrule Historia contained artwork, stories, and the controversial official Zelda timeline. Since then, Zelda fans such as myself have been drooling over fan translations and any other information that we can get in English about the book in hopes of getting an official translation and release in North America. While our wait isn't over yet, we at least know that there is now an end to the wait. It was announced last night that Dark Horse will be publishing an official translation of Hyrule Historia early next year.
Yep, I think end of January is what they're looking at.
Yeah. In North America, the list price of this tome is $35, And then last night when I pre-ordered from Amazon, the selling price was $24.99, and at the time I posted this article, was down to
$20.99. Yes, I have it pre-ordered. I'm very excited.
Scheduled to be released on January 29th, 2013. If you want to pre-order Hyrule Historia from Amazon and lock in their low price guarantee, you can do so here, and I have a link in the article. Now, if only we can get that elusive launch date for the Wii U.
Which we might get soon enough.
Yes.
I'm very excited to see Hyrule Historia come over. I mean, it's something where a lot of the intrigue over it is kind of gone because we kind of have the timeline laid out to us, but it still is the kind of book that will just be awesome to kind of have as a coffee table book.
Yeah, Roger posted a huge article about this when it was released back in December, and especially with the timeline. It had a really involved image with it, I think, from someone from Kotaku made it.
Yeah.
And then I did an update to the article later that day. A press release came from Dark Horse minutes ago to officially announce the book. The plan was to wait for PAX Prime at the end of the month for the reveal. With Amazon posting the pre-order last night, the cat got out of the bag a few weeks early. In less than 24 hours, Hyrule Historia is already number 3 in Amazon's top 100 list.
Wow.
Dark Horse is expecting to see this increase to number 1 shortly, and as of now, it is number 1. It was...
I mean, good for them. I mean, I'm glad that it seems to be getting good buzz, because I would love to see stuff like this to continue to come out. And one of the things that was kind of nice to find out about this is I think it was Rich over at IGN made the comment that apparently Dark Horse and Nintendo have been talking about working together and working on projects for a while now. So that kind of opens up the possibility of Nintendo and Dark Horse working on bringing other Nintendo-related products and books to North America, which is pretty cool.
We'll see a Metroid comic.
Yeah. I mean, and Dark Horse has a proven track record. They work with the Star Wars comics as well, and usually they're pretty good.
Yep. I'm looking forward to that.
Yep.
Just thought about it now because we're talking about Amazon pre-orders. But, you know, going back to what I talked about, Persona 4 and the animation, there is a Blu-ray set coming out in English. Don't remember the date, but sometime later this year. Unfortunately, it's like $50 for half the season.
Ooh.
So it's only 12 episodes. So I'm like, I don't know if I want to pay that much. I have it on pre-order. I might wait to see if the price drops before they're launched, but I might pull that pre-order just at the last minute. But we'll see what happens to it.
All right.
Okay, that's what I got for our show.
It was a good time.
Our big 5-0. You know, we didn't do any 5-hour spectacular like.
Yeah. I don't know if I could recommend that episode, for anyone.
Like your episode 300.
That was a team effort. I think we had 3 different people edit it. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah, I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, because I think Guillaume did the bulk of the work, but I think Johnny and James both pitched in as well.
Yeah, Guillaume has big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
He's doing a good job.
Yeah.
We still haven't gotten an iTunes subscription restarted yet. I hope to work with Dr. Erickson soon. That's one of our many Zachs. We actually did a show, I think it was late last year. We had 3 Zachs on the show.
I recall Zach telling me about that. Which one am I talking about? I don't know.
We're at twitter.com/VGTribune, along with facebook.com/VGTribune. My Twitter handle is Laffer2, and you want to say what yours is?
Mine is Nron10, Nron10.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to plug before we end up?
I've been doing a lot of writing for 1UP.com lately. I did a big old feature on Masahiro Sakurai, who is my very, very favorite developer in the whole wide world. So that's pretty cool. It talks about his development and why he's a really, really bold and crazy designer. I also wrote a feature on Skylanders and why it's so awesome. I wrote about Tetris as an Olympic sport, or at least that's what Hank Rogers and Alexei Pashatnov want.
Nice.
I'm working on a story that will go up the week of PAX Prime for 1UP about StreetPass groups and the StreetPass network. So keep an eye out for that. Also, as far as Nintendo World Report goes, which that is my baby after all, we've got coming in the pipeline a lot of Wii retrospective stuff. We'll be starting in September. Might be a little later than that. We are going to be doing our top 10 first-party games and our top 10 third-party games. And actually, in total, there will be 21 games that we will highlight throughout a month-long period, whether it starts on September 1st or halfway through September. Depends on how everything goes preparing it. But that should be coming soon. And I'm very excited for that. I think there are some honest surprises on the list, and it'll make sense why we have 21 games for what is ostensibly 20 spots when we get there.
That was a tie.
Sort of. You'll have to look to
find out. I'll have to look. Okay. Thanks, Neil, for coming on on such short notice.
Yeah. Stars aligned.
Sweet. Yeah, I just hope the stars would align with the rest of my staff. We'll try the Google Plus Hangout thing again, probably the next episode. I cleaned out my computer, which caused the overheating of the CPU and my shutdown. And I think literally almost emptied out an entire can of air. I couldn't get the taste out of my mouth for 3 or 4 days. And my kids asked, "What happened to my my basement floor?" Where I replied, "Attack of the killer dust bunnies." So my computer is running happy now. So we'll try that again next time. So thanks again for Neil for joining us, and thanks to everyone who's listening. We'll talk to you next time. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Each Zach was spelled differently.
What, Z-A-K, Z-A-C, Z-A-C-H? Or Z-A-C-K?
Yeah, that was Z-A-C-K, Z-A-C, and Z-A-C-H.